pictures, and then we can direct them at Dr. Toynbee. Yes. Yes. The question is, for those of you in the back, are there any specific suggestions that you have for the generalist as to what to study in the light of your remark that the generalist should be a specialist and the specialist should be a generalist?
No, I think he should be very free to follow his bent in the specialization. It's important he should specialize too, to some extent, but I think the freer you are and the more you follow what you have some kind of ability for, the better success you will have. The same would apply the other way around, that the way in which the specialist generalizes should be following his bent, I think.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Toynbee, you used the two terms smattering and superficiality.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
But you give smattering definitely a positive prefix and superficiality not a negative prefix. Would you confirm this? Yeah.
I believe it was heard all over, so.
Superficiality is, I suppose, negative. After all, we're not gods. The human mind is a marvelous instrument, but it's a limited and imperfect one. And with our limited powers and the misfit between these limited powers of knowledge and understanding and the vastness of the field that there is to know, knowledge is bound to be superficial in the bad sense. But I contend that this is much better than nothing. Smattering, I agree, is, I think, it's more than neutral, it's a complimentary word. It means I'd have had a smattering of the calculus if I'd gone on at the age of 16 to mathematics, and that would be invaluable to me for the rest of my life, and I didn't have that, and I wish I had. So I don't at all despise a smattering.
Yes.
I have no cut and dried scheme. I see that all peoples all over the world, the most developed economically and as well as the so-called developing countries, are equally nationalist. We're all equally primitive in that, and this unwillingness, even in face of destruction by atomic weapons, to come together in some kind of worldwide family is very strong in us all. Therefore, I think that, though I believe rather than destroy ourselves, we shall in the end form some kind of world government, I think we shall form it only at the 11th hour, only bit by bit in a very untidy way. I suggested two things, but I think we shall find ourselves forced to have set up world authorities, a trail of atomic waste, and production and distribution of food. But I think it'll be long before we'll be willing to put these things together into some kind of tidy world government. I don't think there'll be a kind of constitutional convention. I don't think the world will build up its government in the way in which the 13 states did after independence in this country. But I think we shall be compelled, as I say, because I think even if we choose it as a lesser evil, we shall think it is a lesser evil than self-destruction, probably self-destruction and some kind of world organization are the two alternatives before us.
Like the UN, but with
something of the possibility of a, like a religious way, like the Crusades or like the old Muslim drive towards conquering the world? Do you see something like that happening in any way? Do you see communism possibly coming out and becoming its the new one religion, you might say, somewhere
else? The question is, in terms of a world government and the building of a world government, do you foresee a federation of nations, or do you see a religious movement which will form a super type of government, such as Muslims or another religion taking over, or perhaps communism? I hope I've got the gist of it.
I think if anything like a world government, or just the beginnings of one, is formed, it can, in the atomic age, only be formed voluntarily, and that would mean it would take a federal form, I suppose. Now, there have been quite a number of attempts at building world states of the past. I've mentioned two, the Chinese Empire and the Roman Empire. They were all founded by force, but of course, they were all founded in the pre-atomic age, when you could use military force as an instrument of policy at an enormous price. One reason why most attempts at world states have been short-lived in the past is that the process of founding them by force was so destructive that they got the seeds of death in them before they were established. So I think in the atomic age, force can do nothing but destroy. It can't have any constructive effect, I think. So I would expect any move towards a world government to take a federal form. Of course, a world government, any government to be effective, has to have effective power to get its decisions carried out. And we have therefore to think, where is the effective power in the world today? I suppose at the moment, 90% of the effective power in the world is in hands of 15% of the world's people, that is the Americo-Russian people, if I may lump you together, you 15% who hold the destinies of us 85% in your hands today. Before long, probably, China will be a third member of the group that holds the destinies of the human race in its hands. And therefore, I would say, unless and until America and Russia and China can, for their own sakes and the human race's sake, get together to put the world in order and keep it in order, we shan't get effective world government of any kind. The effectiveness that America and Russia might have if they cooperate was illustrated at the time of the Suez Affair in December 56, when you didn't cooperate, but you happened for once to, you and the Russians, have the same policy. Now, that was enough to stop dead the attack on Egypt by my country and France and Israel, just the fact that America and Russia had parallel policies. If you cooperated, you could very quickly put the world in order, I think. So great responsibility rests on the shoulders of these two countries, which numerically are together a very small minority of the human race, but are responsible for the rest of us.
Dr. Toynbee says he'll take one more if we... Yes, sir.
In your discussion, you were telling us a little bit about the Americans abroad.
Yes.
And I believe from your discussion that you said that they might possibly be better off as a generalist. Would you verify that or comment on it, please, sir? That the Americans abroad should be generalists instead of specialists?
Well, yes, take the position of anyone in the Foreign Service or any of these technical commissions or in the Peace Corps or in the armed forces. An American in any of those fields may be sent to any part of the world at any moment, and he may have to take most serious decisions about local affairs, may affect the the interests of this country vitally and of the whole world vitally. And it's therefore enormously important you should know at least something, even a smattering, as they call it, is far, far better than nothing about the state of mind of the people. Take the burning question of Vietnam. Perhaps I might say that I hear Vietnam constantly discussed in this country. I only hear discussed from the American point of view. I've been here now since the fall, heard any American discuss it from how it looks like from the Vietnamian point of view, what a Vietnamian might think about the situation. Now, unless one can look at it from the other man's point of view as well as one's own, one isn't going to be able to solve the problem or to come to any agreement or settlement, I think. This is, of course, one of the most difficult and urgent cases. This applies all round. I think America suddenly finds itself in a position in which the ordinary American citizen has to know quite a lot about the whole world. Now, this is something quite new in American experience.